Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
Who did this?
I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, here's the odd part of this. And all of a sudden...
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, stop it. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. Well, we're going to have a good time today, aren't we? Yes, yes. I'm playing both parts. I'm playing the part of you in the background and me in the foreground. Pretty impressive, isn't it? Yeah, I know. That's the kind of show you can expect. Thanks for clicking. And those of you that are picked up by radio stations across the country, you don't know what you've gotten yourself into. You have no idea. Anyway. So I'm watching TV last night. Oh, you're going to get right into it, huh? Okay. So I'm watching TV last night. I'm watching one of those shows where they have funny animal things. And yeah, I know we laugh at people doing funny things, America's Funniest Home Videos, that kind of thing. But here's the odd part that I noticed when I was watching funny animal things. We love to laugh at animals. They're so cute and adorable. They don't know what the hell's going on. That's the funny thing. Animals don't know what the hell's going on. First of all, they don't know they're being videotaped. And secondly, they have no idea what they're doing. And it's funny to us. We laugh at people's mistakes. We find that hilarious. We find it just hilarious. Look, he fell down a hill and broke his leg. Isn't that funny? Look, he can't even walk. He can't even walk. Look at him. He's hobbling, and now he's falling down again. He can't even stand up. I know, that's what we do. It's disgusting. But here's the oddest thing of all, and I'm watching this show, and on the show is a hippopotamus, which is a large, ugly animal. There's a hippopotamus standing there, and another hippopotamus comes up behind it, raises its front legs, and mounts the other hippopotamus, and starts humping away. These two hippopotami, I don't know if that's the plural or not, they're having sex on camera. And what's the reaction by the audience? You got it. Look at the hippopotamuses having sex. They're having sex. I know, look at that. This is humping the other. Just look at the humping going. They're having sex. Hey, look at that. Look at the funny. Look at the expression on the hippopotamus. They're having sex. They're having sex. That's odd. Why would a crowd of people laugh at two animals having sex? If the hippopotamuses found out that people are laughing at them, they'd be very hurt and dismayed. Now, what if you decided to have sex with your partner, your loved one, or even some person that you met on the subway or on the train, and you're going at it, and people see you having sex and react? Look at them having sex! Look how he's enjoying himself. That's so funny. You wouldn't laugh at something like that, would you? Or would you? Oh, look, he's taking his clothes off. Now he's mounting her. He's actually mounting her. Look at him. Look, they're having sex. Look at them having sex together. Look at the expression. Look at the expression on their faces. It's complete pleasure. It's complete pleasure that they're having sex.
The sex thing. Look at them. Look at them. They're having sex. Oh, the sex is funny.
Anyway, I think you get the point. I just found it odd. That's the problem with me. I see things that we see every day, but if you look really closely, we do odd things. We're not completely well. We're not. I don't think we are. I don't think I am. I'm scared of ride sharing. I don't understand that term, ride sharing. That's the Uber thing and the Lyft thing, where here's what happens. You need to get somewhere, so you go to an app on your cell phone or you make a phone call, and somebody picks you up in their own car. You get in the car, and they supposedly take you somewhere, and you pay them, and then you leave. I can't do that. I don't want to get into somebody else's car. That's so vulnerable. It's absurd. Even if they've registered to the Uber Organization of America and signed a little affidavit, I raise my hand and I promise when I pick somebody up, I will not drive them to an open alley and rape them. I promise. I promise I won't take them home and put them in a cage and they'll become my little sex pet. I promise I won't do that. Oh, well, if you signed the paper and you promised, well, of course. I guess as long as you never had any type of criminal history, you can drive an Uber. And also, you need a car. I wouldn't pick anybody. I don't want anybody in my car. I don't even want my family in my car. Should we go out to eat? Not in my car, please. Don't go in my car. My car's got stuff in it. My car's got personal stuff in it. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure there's personal stuff in my car that I don't want people sitting in my car. What if they smell? What if somebody gets in my car and they smell? What if they have an incredibly bad odor to them? Like they stink of garlic or garbage? What if they haven't showered in like 3 weeks? I know people like that. I know people who stink like they haven't showered in 3 weeks. I don't want them in my car. And do I have the right to refuse? If someone gets in my car and I'm an Uber driver and they get in and they stink, do I have the right to say, excuse me, get out of my car, you stink? I don't know that I do. As soon as I put that little Uber sticker on my back windshield, I think I'm in trouble. And then the wear and tear on my car. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Driving around, that puts mileage on your car. People getting into my car, touching my door handles. Don't touch my door handle. I don't know where you've been. You might have been in one of those funny sex tape things. I don't know what you've done. And then you come in there with your garbage. You stink. Get out of my car. I'll never get the odor out again. And on the other hand, I don't want to get into somebody else's car. I don't know what you were doing in the back seat of my car. I don't know what you use that for. All the garbage you put in the back seat, all your McDonald's wrappers and empty cups and food that's been sitting there, like little pieces of chicken that fell out of your mouth 3 years ago and it's laying on the floor of your car. I don't care how much you clean your car. That piece of chicken just hangs on for life to the carpet. I don't know. There's nothing I like about Ubers or Lyfts or anything. I'm not getting somebody else's car. I'll get into a taxi cab because they're regulated. They're regulated. They're inspected. Yeah, I know all kinds of people get into cabs. I realize that. I wear pants. But at the same time, it's regulated. There's medallions all over the place. They're inspected. These people go through tremendous inspections. They're run by cab companies for the most part. They have a record of bringing you places successfully. I don't know who my Uber driver is. Now, granted, when you get into a taxi cab, a registered taxi cab, they have to display their names, which is, oddly enough, the longest names on the planet with no vowels whatsoever. I don't know how that happens, but somehow they find them. It's displayed. There's a meter, so I know exactly how much my... I've gotten out of cabs before because I've said to myself, this is too expensive. There's too many traffic lights. There's too much traffic. I'll get out here and I'll walk. Because I know how much it's costing me any given second. I get into an Uber, I get a flat fee. Who's giving me this fee? I don't know. I don't trust the Uber driver. I know people who drive Ubers, and I don't trust them. Ah, yeah, it's true. I don't know. I'm not into it, man. I took an Uber once in my life, and I hope that's enough. I was in Brooklyn, New York, and I was in a hotel, and I wanted to go to the Brooklyn Museum, which was approximately, I'd say, 3-4 miles away. Not a big trip, really. Although in traffic, it can be considering. So I go to the front and I say to the doorman or whatever you call the guy, I said, I want to go to the Brooklyn Museum. And he says, okay, I'll get an Uber for you. I said, no, a cab, please. And he says, we got the Ubers right here. They put me in an Uber, somebody else's car. I felt very uneasy immediately. I didn't know who this person was. I get in their car. Just the feeling of getting into somebody else's car creeps me out. Creeps me out. Creeps me out to get into a car of a person that I know. Much less I don't know. But I figure the doorman is there and I figure it's okay. So I get in the car and the guy says, $20. Thought, it's New York. I don't know what the prices are. I don't know how far we're really going. $20, fine. $20, fine. And we get in the car, and there's some traffic, and it's taken about 15 minutes, and we get to the Brooklyn Museum. I get out. I give him $20. Give him a couple of bucks, you know, for gas, lunch money. I have no idea. I tip him a little. And I leave. And I go into the museum, and I have one hell of a roarious time in the museum. Looking at stuff on walls. That's what you do when you go to a museum. You look at stuff on walls. They should just call it the stuff on walls building. After about 10 minutes of looking at stuff on walls, I've pretty much had it. But anyway, I'm with my loved one, and she loves to look at stuff on walls. She's a stuff on walls expert. Me, I don't give a crap what's on the walls. As a matter of fact, I have a standing joke that I use all the time, and people get kind of tired of me using the same joke. You know, they're looking at the stuff on the walls, these great paintings of all time, so to speak. It's a picture of a boat in the water, and for some reason, that's an important stuff on the wall. There's always a fire extinguisher hanging on the wall by regulation, and I always point to the fire extinguisher and I say, look at that, that is a beautiful piece of art. And the other person laughs because I've said something funny. It's about the only reason I go to a building with stuff on walls, so I can use that joke. Try it yourself. It's a good time. So we finish up our time in the Brooklyn Museum. Walk outside. There's a cab sitting there. And I'm saying to myself, all right, man, a good old New York cab. And we get in the cab, and I give him the name of the hotel. And the guy turns around and says, great, and steps on the gas, and we're on our way to the hotel. We get to the hotel, $8. What? $8. Ooh, that makes no sense. I pay the guy $8. I give him a $3 tip. I've still saved myself a lot of money from the other $20 trip going the same distance. So is Uber good? No. It was like more than twice as much as the metered cab. And that solidified my unindulgence in the shared ride experience. A shared ride. Who am I sharing it with? I don't understand. I'm sharing it with the guy that picked me up in his car. Or the woman, whatever. I don't get it. Sorry, don't get it. A lot of things I don't get. That's one of them. I don't get it. No shared rides for me. I'm sorry I'm laughing. I'm just imagining a hippopotamus having sex with another hippopotamus. It's just hilarious.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, winner of every international and global podcasting award Ron has given himself. He writes them in crayon, on construction paper.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of cute.
Thank you. It's kind of cute, to be honest with you. Today's show is free, by the way. Usually there's a charge to listen to this program, quite obviously. It's a flat fee. And we take credit cards and all different kinds of forms of payment, but today it's free. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah? Oh, we accept Visa, MasterCard, and Discover.
Well, that's one way to get you to pay, I suppose. I really don't know. I have a very interesting guest coming up momentarily, as a matter of fact. One of them is a CNN commentator. The other is an expert in the field. They have written a book about mistrust of the government. Boy, what a great time for this book to come out. I so much don't trust the government, and neither do you. And yet there was a time in our lives, before we were born probably, where people loved the government. The government took care of them, protected them, was a lot smarter than they were, had secrets of smartness. Think tanks where these geniuses would invent and come up with these incredible items. And forms of protection and wonderful things. Nowadays, government doesn't know what they're doing. No governments know. There was a time back in the 70s when people hated the government. It was around the time of the Vietnam War, and the people revolted against the government. That's been going on really ever since, says these two authors. And today, we reach the pinnacle in our lives where we so totally think that the government is screwed up. It is. But the biggest problem is that the person who's supposed to save us from all of that is the biggest screw-up of all. This man, this Trump figure, will go down in history, I guarantee you, as the most disruptive thing we have ever seen anywhere in government. Good times, man. Good times. But whose fault is it? I've talked about this before. Is it the fault of Donald Trump? No. He's just being his obnoxious panty liner self. Is it the fault of Hillary Clinton? No, she wanted to be president and wasn't the best choice, but she had the political machine behind her. That was a problem. Well, then whose fault is it? It's your fault. You voted for the schmuck. Not all of you, but apparently enough. Popular vote? No. Doesn't seem to get through to Donald's head. He was never popular. Do you know that Donald Trump, you've heard the name before? Is the only president in history, whom in the first 2 years of his presidency never achieved majority of popularity. In other words, his favorability numbers were always well below 50%. He never went above 50% in any polls whatsoever that he was doing anywhere near a good job. That's never happened before. Good luck in your reelection, Don, if you make it that far. Personally, I think that Trump, if he's ever reelected, it will be in an orange jumpsuit. Because he will be indicted. And the biggest question of our government is a president, because he was elected into the White House somehow, is he above the law? And those of you that say, yes, he's above the law, he can do whatever he wants, he can put my sister in a cage and force feed her monkeys, anything. He can shoot somebody in the balls, and he can't be indicted. He's above the law. He is totally above the law. If that's what you believe, then we got a problem. And I think we're going to have a problem. That's my assumption. I have lost a lot of money. I've lost $50 in making bets on when Trump would be removed from office because of some horrendous, treasonous, awful incompetency that he has. I said a year ago that he'd be out of office. I was wrong. I lost some money there. Then I extended it to April of this past year. That didn't happen. Now I've extended it to February, and I that might be a little close. Now, if that doesn't work out, I'm telling you, by July, something's gonna happen to this guy. He's gonna be under indictment. He's gonna be jailed. He's gonna resign. I don't know what's gonna happen, but by August, July, he's out of here. He's got to be. He's just got to be. Just like throw him in an Uber with a rogue driver or something. Just slap some sense into a guy that has none. No empathy. No understanding. His love for himself greatly outweighs his love for anybody who lives in this country. Anybody of any ounce of humanity. Yes, he's a sexist. He's a racist. He's all those things. He's a puppet of the Russian government. See, here's my assessment. I'm sorry to get into this, but it's the weekend. Here's my assessment. Donald Trump is not, he's not a Russian spy. Not smart enough to be a Russian spy. He would have said he was by now because he says everything. Here's my assessment of where Trump is at. He is literally a stupid man. He knows how to read, but he can't read. He can't. He's not a celebrity. He's not a seasoned performer. He can't even read off a teleprompter without sounding like a second grader in front of a class dressed as a wolf. He can't even read. He knows how to read, but he can't do it. He is legitimately unintelligent. He does not soak in information. He only soaks in what he needs to soak in to survive and to make money. He doesn't care about anybody else. His family members, read the book. There's a lot of books out on this. His family members showed him no love, just gave him money. Donald is void of feelings, of the human emotions that we all feel toward a loved one, toward somebody we care for. He has none of that. He has no dogs. He has no pets in the White House. He loads it up with his own family members. He manipulates, he calls people names, he bullies, etc., etc., etc. The man has no feelings. He's like the Wizard of Oz on steroids for so many reasons. He has no heart. He has no brains. Yet he lives in the Emerald City. He is the man behind the curtain, but when the curtain is drawn back, there's the wizard who has, like, nothing. He's just a guy, a stupid guy. Donald is the Wizard of Oz, which is the biggest scam going. Donald's only point in life is to have power. When he visits these dictators like Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin and other leaders who are not voted in, really. They are just dictators for life. The president of China, he will be president for life. They just voted that in, voted. They made that happen in China. Donald loves that. When these leaders say something or do something, it is done because nobody can challenge. They will die if they challenge. They'll be assassinated. Donald loves that. A world where he can be king forever and never be challenged and never be questioned. He wants that. And I think he probably said to Vladimir somewhere along the line, I would love to be naked on a horse with you. You would be leader of Russia, I would be leader of the United States, and we would both be leaders and reap all the benefits and all the money. I do money laundering just like you do, Vladimir, and together we would rule the world. That's what Donald wants. He wants power for himself. That's his drug. That's his fuel. But he's a stupid man, and he's being used by every other leader because they can see how stupid and useful this puppet can be. And they use him, and they manipulate him. The great manipulator, Donald Trump, is nothing but a pitiful puppet to these greater manipulators. That's my assessment of the man. All right, I've wasted enough of your time. We're going to take a short commercial break, and when we come back, these gentlemen will be joining us, and we're going to talk about how we feel about the government at this point and how long that's been going on. So, you ready? First this.
Gentlemen, did you ever notice that it always seems to be the ladies who pamper themselves with a spa day, with the mani-pedi and the facials and the massage? Do you ever think maybe you'd like to have a special day for yourself, but you are afraid it might be a little gay? Well, good news, gentlemen. Now you can have your own special spa day at Ramon Ramirez's Not-So-Gay Salon for Men. Let Ramon Ramirez take the stress off a tough day with a long, deep massage. It's not gay, it's therapeutic. After you relax, Ramon Ramirez will use special oils and lotions and maybe clean up some of your hairier man parts. It's not gay, it's hygienic. A lot of guys are doing it. Then it's time to kick back and let it all hang out in a long steam room session with Ramon Ramirez. It's not gay, much. So gentlemen, why wait? It's time for you to have a great day for yourself at Ramon Ramirez's Not So Gay Salon for Men. Please, no fat guys.
CNN political analyst Julian Zelzer joins us. And Princeton historian Kevin Cross joins us. We're talking about their new book, Fault Lines, A History of the United States Since 1974. I can relate to this. I was alive then. And there was great mistrust in the government, basically because of the Vietnam War. A lot of protests all across the country, some of them quite violent. And I thought that was the end of it after that. But apparently we're in a cesspool right now as well, in a different manner. I guess that's what's going on. But the mistrust has crept up and boiled over again, I guess.
Yeah, and that's a story that, you know, that's a moment we start the book in, is that kind of crisis of confidence across the country in the early 70s. And Vietnam is a huge part of that, the protests leading up to the removal of U.S. troops in 1975. Mm-hmm. Right before that, a year before, you've got Watergate, the resignation of Richard Nixon. Right before that, you've got 1973 and the oil crisis. And suddenly it seems like the American economy is sputtering out. So there's a series of events in the early 70s that really rock the faith of the country in its big institutions, and that's really the starting point of the book.
Yeah, interesting.
So the distrust never really went away. I mean, that's part of what we argue. The minute he steps down, there's no moment of healing. There's no moment of things coming together. Yeah. The things that have opened up because of Vietnam, because of Nixon, those define the next four decades of American politics and American life beyond politics. Yeah.
Well, if you might say in comparison, there was a sleepy period from the 80s until just 2 years ago. Till it all, you know, was brought to the brim by you know who in the White House, was there still mistrust going on or had it indeed waned?
Yeah, I mean, we argue there is no sleepy period. I guess that's what we're trying to say through the history, that this has been building and the distrust was still there. The divisions, not only did they exist, but they were inscribing themselves into a lot of our main institutions, the media, Congress, and things have been bubbling up. And if you look at coverage of politics in the 1990s, for example, or even the 1980s, you see some of the similar themes. So what we're seeing now is this system that we have built, the society we have built, ramped up on steroids, and with a figure, President Trump, who is fine diving right in to the discourse.
This is an interesting one, yet though with no story end that's predictable, because we have different components here. This time, when we talked about the 70s, it was the free press that really gave us the information that was trusted to no end, because they were breaking things down. They were helping to question. They were doing some incredible investigative reporting, and everybody was on the press's side. Now, this guy has somehow succeeded in turning the press into a part of the mistrust.
Yeah.
So we're in a different ballgame.
That's a huge theme of the book. So again, if you look back at Watergate, one of the big things that helps bring Nixon's resignation about is the fact that the media really does present kind of a unified front on this, right? There's no, you know, there's no Fox News, there's you know, kind of right-wing media that's going to kind of be in his corner at that moment. They really do all kind of lay out all the facts for the public. They air those hearings live. It's this big dramatic moment, and it really sways the country to do that. And then it inspires, as you noted, it inspires this new wave of trust in journalism that we're going to, you know, investigative reporters are going to dig out the dirt and really bring this to light. What happens, though, is that, first of all, the public gets bored with all the scandals. It becomes kind of depressing, right, at the end. You know, everything's wrong, everything's bad. But what really changes is the media landscape fractures. And so in Nixon's time, you had the big three networks. You had a couple big newspapers, and that was really what set the pace for the country. With the rise of cable TV and then talk radio and then the Internet and social media, it's been fractured into 1,000 pieces, and now there are a variety of different voices and perspectives out there. In a lot of ways, that's good, but in this context, it means that every political issue, it's not that somebody says, oh, hey, you know, the president did all these things and those are wrong. You get, well, they're wrong, or maybe he didn't do them, or maybe they're right. You know, you get a variety of opinions, and it really clouds the conversation.
There's no question about it. Not only do you have the variety of opinions, but you have the internet and the social media. And I mean, you see, in my mind, there are two sets of human beings. There are the people such as ourselves in the media who are aware of everything and can make choices based on total knowledge. Then there's the other half of the country that responds by saying, did you hear what Bob said down the street about the government? And that's taken to be, you know, to be gospel, because they're not connected at all. I think that's what the division is.
I think that last part of what you just said is increasingly a common phenomenon. Yeah. That's part of what is rigidifying these divisions, meaning people are getting their information about politics, about American society, through like-minded sources.
Correct.
The quality of the source doesn't really matter, nor does the veracity of the information. They just want to hear, you know, what Bob told them, which already confirms what they believed. And that's a dysfunctional news structure.
Is there a possibility that this time around, because Trump does not tend to wander toward the truth side of things, that exposure of him going into a position where he says that
everything is horrible. The government is horrible. These are our enemies that are amongst us. When he goes down, which he will, does that not bring us back down, take us down a couple of rungs on the ladder where maybe everything he said wasn't true?
I mean, you'd hope so, and that was certainly yes, true. You know, with Nixon, a lot of Nixon's defenders came to regret what they had done,
yes,
and all the things they'd said. They kind of had been hung out to dry by him, and had gone out on a ledge. I'm mixing my metaphors here. Gone out on a ledge and found themselves really kind of hanging out there.
Yeah.
But we have to remember that even after Nixon resigned, there were still a lot of people who were in his corner. You know, he still has public approval of about 25% after he resigns. There's still a quarter of the country who's on his side. And so, Trump's approval is not that far north of that. So he might shave some of that off if he gets exposed. But I don't think you're going to see the scales fall from everyone's eyes, certainly.
Oh, God, no. I don't think the scales ever fell from everybody's eyes at any point in our history, unless you go back to Musket times. Other than that, probably, I mean, we were never that pure and constitutional to begin with. Fascinating book. It delves into much deeper than what we're even talking about here. It's called Fault Lines, A History of the United States Since 1974. Who knows? Is there an ending to the book where all of a sudden rainbows start shooting out of people's asses and things like that? No.
No, there's not. We end it with the last year of the Trump presidency, but it's very much an epilogue in progress.
Yeah.
And we don't come to a resolution. We're historians, so there's a hard end. And I don't know what comes next. I don't think Kevin does either.
Yeah, well,
I mean, maybe we'll be back in 5 years with a rosy ending. I don't know.
Yeah, or at least a couple of more books.
Or not.
Yeah, who knows? Okay, it's available everywhere at this point.
Yes, sir. Yes, everywhere you can get a book, you can get this.
Okay. Fault Lines, A History of the United States Since 1974. Is there a website that we can follow and keep following this subject matter?
Not a website for the book, but you can find it at the publisher's W.W. Norton, and they've got a nice page for it.
Very cool. Hey, thank you so much for the information. This is important stuff, really, bottom
Thanks
line.
Thanks for having us on.
Okay, you
Thanks
take
for
care.
Having us.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
That's pretty interesting stuff. Well, I'm out of time for today. I really don't know what to say at this point, so I'll just say goodbye. Make this day a wonderful day. It's within your power to do so. And until the next weekday rolls around, I wish you peace.